Welcome to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. This week's episode is released a day earlier than normal to celebrate International Women's Day. And it's for working mums specifically, for whom I think this episode will probably especially resonate. But given the theme of this year's International Women's Day is Each for Equal, I hope it's also valuable for men too, as we know equality is not a women's issue, it's everyone's issue, and it's certainly a business issue. You'll hear how impending motherhood thrust today's guest into a career T-junction, what that meant for her, and what she did about it. So, today's guest is Nicola Daniel, aka Davo, and you'll hear more about her name and also a lot about her identity as we go through the episode. I have to say, the other wonderful thing about doing this podcast, on top of helping people share their brave and inspiring stories of change, is that I meet new people and I also connect with old friends. And Davo falls into the latter category. We worked together last over 12 years ago and stayed loosely in touch, but hadn't seen much of each other until she got in touch after she heard one of my earlier episodes. Davo called me up and we had an incredible chat on the phone, and I asked her to be one of my guests on the podcast, as I knew her story was exactly what the Mojo Podcast is all about. How we humans deal with challenges in life and make decisions to make change to rediscover our lost mojo. In this episode, you'll hear what happens when your work life and your personal life are put into conflict and hard choices have to be made. How do you thrive in motherhood when your very identity is challenged? And how do you recalibrate what success now means for you when your targets in life have fundamentally changed? And this is exactly what Davo faced and overcame before setting up not just one, but two businesses of her own. This is a frank and honest conversation. There is so much to learn from Davo's experiences of motherhood at this career junction. I'm really proud of Davo for telling her story, as I am of all the brave guests I've had on the podcast so far. And tellingly, most of the guests so far have been women. I think it's great to hear those powerful female voices. I hope they inspire you as much as they inspire me. This episode will make you think, it'll make you laugh, and it'll certainly leave a smile on your face. And whatever your gender, I hope it'll encourage you to do what you can for greater gender equality. So please enjoy, and as usual, please do leave a 5-star rating and write a short review to help more people discover the Mojo Podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. And this week, my guest is Nicola Daniel. And it's, I almost stumbled over that because I know you as Davo, because we used to work with each other a long time ago. I'm going to try and call you Nicola.
Davo's fine.
We'll stick to Davo.
I sometimes regret departing from the Davy Davo side, so I try and keep it alive.
We'll keep Davo alive today. So Davo and I are in the chapel at the House of St. Barnabas in London, Soho. So you'll probably hear some atmospheric noises around us, but it is a lovely spot full of beautiful stained glass windows, high vaulted ceiling, an amazing organ, and I thought just a really good place to sit down and do today's Mojo Podcast recording. So hello, Davo.
Hello, thank you for bringing me to such a lovely place.
My pleasure. As I said, I always start this way, but how is your mojo today?
I would say it's a really banging 8.5. And only 8.5 because I've got some slightly poorly little kids at home. So that kind of takes a little bit of my brain away. But otherwise, it's a very positive 8.5.
Very positive mojo with just some things on your mind by the sounds of it. But
the littles, that we were all meant to be in London today together, actually. That was kind of like the plan, and of course plan B had to kick in when both of them were poorly, so they're home with dad. That's fine, I'm here with you.
And when you think about mojo, what does that mean to you?
I thought about this because I've been listening to your podcast over the last few weeks, and I feel like mojo to me is when I'm really in flow with really good momentum. And I actually visualize this kind of like equalizer sort of image that, you know, like on old school hi-fis. And yes, like I'm old enough to have bought music back in my day. And I kind of have these equalizing sort of things that are about enjoyment and momentum and authenticity. And when those things are really high, I feel like I've got really good mojo. But when things like self-doubt or procrastination and things like that are setting in, I feel like that kind of conflicts with my mojo. So I really see it as a visual thing, actually.
I love that. And actually, I recorded recently with someone who talked about levels.
Oh, really?
And the thought that came into my mind was exactly that image you had of the old school graphic equalizer on your MIDI system, probably at home, and adjusting them.
Bouncing up and down, you know, you get your greens and yellows and reds, and you see them bouncing up those different levels. So yeah, I kind of have that visual image of where my mojo is happening and kind of decipher what exactly is happening in those levels.
And when you're seeing, because you said it's very visual, you're seeing those levels being low and then probably feeling it as well, what are you doing to adjust those levels and manage your mojo a bit better?
I think the thing that helps me is to just take a step back and take a bit of a deep breath and not be too bogged down by like cloudy, fuzzy stuff that's happening, and try and get outside and have a bit of a walk, which I think a lot of people would attest to the benefits of that. And yeah, just try and like take a step back and probably try and do something a bit active, help clear your head.
Now, you mentioned the kids in the opening, and we're going to talk about motherhood today, or you're going to talk about motherhood, because I have no experience of motherhood. I'm about to have experience of fatherhood, but that's a different matter. Thank you. We're going to talk about your experience of it and how that put you, in your words, at this career T junction you're kind of thrust into, and really how you responded to that. And maybe to set that up, I think we need to step back a little bit in time and maybe to talk about maybe life just before becoming a mother and what was going on for you. So where should we start?
I was assured a transfer when I was working internationally, and I was assured a transfer, and I was kind of assured that it was a sure thing, and that sure thing actually didn't end up happening, and I was 21 weeks pregnant at the time. So there's me, I'd spent coming up to 6 years living abroad, having a great old time, my career was kind of really flying in the right direction, I was really personally satisfied, but had this big life moment happening. Yeah, I wanted to move back to the UK and be around my parents and, you know, my in-laws, all that kind of stuff.
Because you knew you were pregnant and home was calling.
Yeah, definitely. And I had the right conversations with the right people at the right time to set all that up. And for one reason or another, and it's kind of the reasons why things didn't happen isn't important. For me, that T-junction smack in the face was, I'm no longer going to be working in the way and for the person, you know, the company that I thought I would spend a pretty decent length of my career with. So hence the T-junction. I was put in that position, and I didn't volunteer myself to not have a job to move back to the UK with. And that was the T-junction. That was the decision.
So you say it wasn't about the circumstances necessarily of what happened. It was that you were now in this position. You'd had a plan, I guess, for your career.
Yeah.
And you decided, obviously, you wanted to start a family. And for one reason or another, those two didn't seem to go together.
Yeah, and like, you know, at the time when I was living through it in real time, I was really, really angry, and I was really frustrated. I was really upset. I felt really let down. But I was working in America, and I had 10 days notice, and so I quit because I knew my worth and my value was worth more than that, and worth more than how I was being treated. So did I throw my toys out my pram? Maybe, but I just knew that I couldn't continue the length of time in the US with knowing what, you know, the writing was on the wall. So I gave my 10 days notice, and I spent the rest of a couple of weeks kind of enjoying New York before the move back home, you know. And it was and it wasn't worth, I'm not bitter about it now. I look at it and it was a complete gift. And I would never have been brave enough, and I know I can say that for a fact, I would never have been brave enough to have put myself in that situation. I needed to have the external push, if you like. I needed to be pushed in that direction to then work out what it was I was going to do next. But yeah, I don't hold grudges. I didn't burn any bridges. I didn't get walked over because I said my piece, and I said it in a way that I could hold my head up high and we both knew where we stood.
And that sounds like it was important to you to do it in your way, as you said, to say your piece and to move on from it in a way.
Yeah, because I'm non-confrontational person. I really don't, and I really truly don't, I'm not a bitter person and I don't hold grudges. I really would hold that as being kind of what I'm, that's just part of who I am. But at the same time, when something like that happens and I felt like I had really given a lot of myself to this employer, I felt like I had to say my piece. I had to kind of have my voice heard. But done so in a way that means that, you know, you're not being an a-hole. So I don't want to swear.
in American sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you've got to do it in a decent way. I wanted to still be a decent person.
Well, I was going to say, you talked about it, you wouldn't change it. It sounded like it was a highly instructive experience for you. And we'll come on to where you've taken life and career since then. What advice would you give to other women who may be in that position, and it could be to do with becoming a mother and it being in some kind of conflict with current employment and a kind of thrust, as you say, into that T-junction, not out of choice?
I think I might have mentioned this when I was talking through my experience, but know your worth and know your value and allow your own values to direct you in how you're going to deal with that situation. And obviously plan for the future. But I think it's really important. You've got the only person that can get you out of that situation is yourself. So you really have to kind of look internally and really understand who you are, where you want to go, and obviously, you know, make plans from there. But don't be bitter. Don't hold on to negative energy and negative thoughts. It's all about, you know, you'll just keep yourself in that phase. It's all about moving forward and moving out of it. And obviously talking to people, because that always helps.
So there is a self-reliance, but there's also who are your allies around you that can be your coaches, be your mentors to the situation you're going through. Did that help you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I don't know who coined this saying, but a problem shared is a problem halved. And it's really true, isn't it? Regardless of kind of what's going on, I have found that, crowdsourcing is always really helpful.
Crowdsource a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so you became a mum back in the UK.
Yeah.
And there's something in that tone. Tell me, how was that experience versus maybe what you'd expected it to be?
I had zero expectations. I now look back and realise that I was the most flying by the seat of my pants person into motherhood, and no one knows what they're doing. I know that for a fact. No one gives you that manual. I know that's a very common thing to say, but I massively lost my mojo in that moment. I think the combination of not having an absolute clue what to do with a newborn baby, combined with not actually having a clue what to do in my life. I didn't have a job to go back to. I felt like I'd lost my identity. When I go to mum groups and I'm going to Baby Sensory and I'm like, oh, what do you do? I now no longer have a thing that I do. And I had to really kind of sort all that out in my own head, at the same time as being worried that I don't love my baby as much as other people and I don't know what I'm doing and, oh my God, what on earth has happened to me? And I'm so tired and I have got zero mojo. If I get downstairs and this morning is still on, like, I'm having a good day. All of those things compounded into just, what is going on in my life right now?
Wow. So that, and I have heard, I mean, I have heard, I said I don't know much about motherhood, but I have heard from other mothers about that identity crisis that goes on. But it sounds like yours was magnified by the, well, I don't have an employer. I'm not on mat leave. I am unemployed.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for a bit of context, I moved back to the UK in the beginning of June, and I lived out of a car for 2 months because we were waiting for our house to go through. So our friends and obviously family sort of put us up, but in all sense of purposes, I did not have a home until August bank holiday, and then my baby was born at the end of September. So basically moved back to the UK, finally moved into our house, and then the baby was due 2 weeks after we'd moved in, but she was late. So just really didn't have a long time to adjust to anything. So probably bit off a bit more than I could chew at that point in time. So yeah, there was a lot of things going on, I think.
Well, I mean, being a parent for the first time, there's a whole load of plate juggling anyway, let alone with coming back to a country, not having a home of your own to move into. My God, yeah. You did. That was a lot.
Not having that career, you know, it was, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, my career and my work life was a huge part of who I am. And, you know, that's why it was such a tough pill to swallow, I think, because I poured everything into that. And now I look back, because hindsight is obviously a bloody great rescuer, and I realised that I was always measuring myself against a yardstick that no longer was relevant. So my measurement of success as a mum or as this now unemployed person, you know, I was measuring it against a success metric that no longer was relevant to me. And I can only now, with hindsight, look back and kind of go, that's why it was actually quite tough. You know, I was used to measuring my success against things like working on sexy brands that, you know, my dad knows that can talk about in the pub, and that other people in the agencies that I worked at would really like the chance to work on those brands, on promotions and on status and all that kind of stuff. So if that was always been my measure of success, and I no longer have that component in my life, then I was a bit of a lost soul. And then your success just I recalibrated what success meant to me. And of course, it was internalized. It became much more around the happiness and healthiness of my family and my family unit, and what I do as a career that wraps around and sits in that and fuels it. Those two things had to kind of come together.
You were not expecting to have to do that, but in time, that recalibration happened. Was that like a natural thing? Did you get some help with that?
Yeah, my husband's really annoying because he's really amazing at being, he's amazing at everything, really, but he's really, really pragmatic. And talk about chalk and cheese, two people coming together and kind of like, he is the absolute voice of reason in my world. And so I would talk to him about, you know, how I was feeling, what I was going to do. And it was him. He could pluck it out of my head for me. And he was like, but what are the things that you love doing? And what do you want to do? And he sort of could visualize he could see what my like best qualities were and my skill set and all that kind of stuff. He helped me put together this idea in my head that just kind of grew and grew. And I was like, oh, actually, you're right. Oh, actually, yeah, that's really good. And, you know, I just helped myself to develop it. But it was him really that helped kind of navigate the fog at that time.
And that idea created where you are now, the business that you run now?
Yeah. It was really funny because we went from having these chats. Cassie was probably about 6 months old at the time. And we went from having these sort of like chats about, oh, what am I going to do? And me being a bit like, poor me, I haven't got a job. To one night, I named it and I drew it and I got a piece of paper and I traced the logo using different Google images and I sent it to one of our mutual friends, Bondors, and said, can you turn this into a digital file? Because I'm just doing something. Bought a URL, scamped out a website, chucked it up on there, and literally overnight I went, ta-da, I've done it, I've got the answer. And but that's me and that's how I work, and a thought just needs to go into the head. It needs to ponder for a while, and then all of a sudden it goes bang, that's it. And when I knew, when it was crystal clear then, and so I just had to squirrel in through the night, get it done, and then yeah, my new baby was born the next day.
And just before we get into more detail on the new baby, the business baby, just not for comparison, but just for reference for people, how long did that idea sit with you before you went boom? You had that night of creation, and literally was born on the kitchen table by the sound of it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I reckon on that one, I think it was a slow, drippy thought process. process probably over a good couple of months. I'd say, maybe like two, three months of that sort of really feeding my head with, could be this, could look like that, could be this. Oh, what about that? And then it was, yeah, it probably took about two or three months, which I think is quite quick considering, you know, you've got the world is your oyster, and then you just be able to, yeah, kind of have that moment, that crystallization and something so big and profound for your life to, yeah, happen.
And how did you feel at that moment where it all came together and you were literally drawing logo and you created the name and you birthed this idea?
Oh, my mojo was pumping, Rich. Because I felt like there was something tangible, and it was, I'd created it, and it was visual, and it felt, it was real. It was now part of my world, and I could talk about it. The next step was to obviously go and talk about it. So that was a bit of a challenge, because I was kind of, oh, well, I've done that now. Surely this is just it. I've created it. But it was a huge, huge hurdle. And I think one of the tips and stuff that you hear on podcasts and stuff all the time, isn't it, about avoiding perfectionism and, you know, getting something 80% done is better than it being 100% perfect. And I just had to take a bit of a leap of faith and be like, I could ponder this. I probably had got to that crystallization point to your question earlier. Like, how long did it take you? I was probably there a little bit earlier, and I was holding myself back from really wanting to follow through with it for fear of, nobody's going to believe me, I can't do this. Da, da, da. And so I just, you know, throw caution to the wind, just do it, get it done, and then reaped the benefit of feeling like super duper chuffed. And it felt right.
I think that's the key. It feels right. You know, it goes from an idea in the head to now it's time to share it with more people. On that, I've realised we haven't actually said the name of your business. Can you tell us more about it?
Oh, my business. And still, like, saying that out loud, still, it's 3.5 years old, and still saying my business sounds like I just get the whole imposter syndrome still happening. Yeah. Do you find that?
I get a little bit of it. I also get, you know, I get this weird thing when I go into buildings and I have to sign in as Mojo Development, which is my business name, I get a little rush of all, it's pride and a little bit of disbelief. So there's a bit of imposter syndrome in there, because we've both spent a long time in corporate businesses where you are part of that corporate entity and you sign the name of whatever business you are working for. But when it's your business, yes, it is different.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so my business is called Chicken Egg Dinosaur. And what's great about the name of the business, if I do say so myself, is more than anything, it's a conversation starter. And to your point about signing in somewhere or having to give your email address, nicola@chickeneggdinosaur.com, it never fails, never, to kind of evoke, oh, that's an interesting, oh, that's a funny name thing. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's mine. Like, yeah, it's mine. So that's great. I wanted something that was going to be a bit of a kind of a thought provoking, yeah, you know, a bit unusual, and it's born from a playful energizer that I think both you and I were exposed to actually on a previous training course in previous lives, and I really liked how what it meant in terms of it's quite playful, it's a bit irreverent, it can mean whatever you want it to mean. Some people like to think, oh, is it because what came first, the chicken, the egg, or the dinosaur? And I'm like, if that starts getting you thinking, then awesome, you can think about that.
Right, so it's memorable, it provokes thought, gets people talking.
Yeah.
But can you remind us of the energizer?
Yeah, so I do remember the energizer, and actually it was really interesting because I was with the guys who initially trained me on Chicken Egg Dinosaur on a training course quite recently that I put myself on. Because I think it's still important to, you know, obviously invest in your own craft and your own skill. And when I went around the room and kind of said, you know, Nicola from Chicken Egg Dinosaur, they were like, oh, Chicken Egg Dinosaur, we know what Chicken Egg Dinosaur means. And can I just say, I did have a look to make sure that it's not trademark, it's not registered trademark or anything, it's completely fine.
It's yours.
Yeah, it's mine now. But it's the Chicken Egg, it's a name of a fun game where you essentially play paper, scissors, stone, and you win and progress through you become a chicken and then a dinosaur. And it's just a fun energizer. It gets people moving. It gets people laughing and just lightens the mood and gets people into a bit of a playful spirit, which is kind of always good.
What I love about that, that's what you are, you know, a playful spirit. And if that's how brilliant to coin the name of your business in that it's something that's really personal to you and it does all those thought-provoking bits and conversation starters that we talked about. I mean, what a great achievement.
Oh, thanks, Ray. That's really sweet of you. Thanks. I would hopefully, when businesses and people get me involved, they will feel that as a quality. That's what I would like to bring to projects that I work on is a playful spirit. So
tell us a little bit about some of the work you've done or you're doing and where you want to take the business.
At the heart of what I want to do is help develop and build a creative culture in different businesses. And I want to give people tools in that they can use and techniques that they can use that help them to have a more kind of creative approach to problem solving. So whether it is understanding what the business problem is at the heart of it, right the way down to, do you know what, we need some ideas actually to deliver our strategy. And then I want to go in and help them kind of navigate that and get through it and do so in a way that it's fun and it makes for more profitable outcomes. But in doing so, the process is more fun.
And recognising that creativity, with a small C, yeah, is of value to any business.
Yeah, 100%. So you'll find on my website, I've got three beliefs as a business, and one of those beliefs, the first one, is actually that creativity isn't a department or a title, it's a cultural value. And the moment that you put the onus of creativity onto a certain person or onto a certain team of persons, there's instantly your problem. So I like to, it's about unpacking that, making it really fluid around the organization, and therefore that kind of lifts creativity.
And I'm just sort of nodding away as Dave-O was talking through that, because I've worked in a lot of businesses, as we both have, where you've had that head of creativity, that department, and everybody defers when there's a need for something creative. Oh, they'll do it.
Yeah.
And what a terrible wasted opportunity, because everybody is creative.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And so I want to be, you know, part of the solution in unlocking that creativity in businesses and helping that as a value sort of like rush through that organization.
And obviously, you know, your work as such is working with businesses and organizations to help them to be more creative. What can listeners do to be more creative, do you think, just day to day?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because my provocation is that you don't need a business problem to solve to necessarily be creative. That actually you can bring creative problem solving into your day-to-day life all the time. I like to use extremes to try and help me navigate where, you know, where there might be a bit of kind of interest and intrigue. So, for example, I like to ask myself, you know, in the true Dr. Pepper style, like, what's the worst that can happen? And then what would the best case scenario be? Or what would be the easiest thing to do versus what would be the hardest thing to do? And I think when you give yourself those kind of like polar opposites to really sort of like try and test yourself to go into those territories, you start to feel, I'm a very touchy-feely, intuitive-led person, but you start to feel where is safe space, where feels like it could be a bit more challenging but a bit more like rewarding and a bit more fruitful. So I think asking yourself, kind of finding those polar opposites and giving yourself the challenge of kind of allowing yourself to go and like live in those polar opposite spaces for a while and see what it feels like.
Oh, I love that. That sort of exercise. And is that something, as you say, it doesn't need to be a business problem or anything to do with your work. This could be, where should we go on holiday, I suppose? Could it be, that's not mundane, but it could be any kind of decision.
Totally. We spoke earlier about my kind of my homecoming, that feeling in my stomach that I wanted to come home when I was going into the next life stage of having a family of my own. And I remember walking through through Central Park in New York, and I was actually on the phone to one of our mutual friends, Vicky Connerty, who's also been on your podcast at the time, and having this real moment of clarity while talking to her that the only reason why I wanted to stay in New York was because I liked saying that I lived in New York. And so when I put myself in the situation of where's your ego right now, and kind of what are those polar opposites of your ego doing, and how is that influencing your decision making, it was really clear that actually there's a lot of good reasons why I wanted to stay in New York. Undoubtedly the most creative, amazing place that I've ever had the experience of kind of being, but I knew that it was for the wrong reason at that point in time, and it was that exercise that helped me kind of navigate that feeling that I couldn't quite put my finger on until I did that exercise.
So doing that exercise, and there's a couple of other things there. So you're walking, which
yes,
we know
always, yeah.
really helps with expansive thinking, and you were talking to someone who maybe was doing more listening.
Yeah. Well, if Quality ever listens, then yeah, I'm really joking. She is a great listener. A great listener and a great friend. And yeah, exactly. I think walking, talking it out, and I'm an extrovert thinker, so I'm one of those people that will come up to you and have verbal diarrhea, blah, 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 and say, oh, thanks so much, you've been so helpful. And then I leave somebody looking completely blank faced, as if to say, I didn't actually say a word, but I need that extrovert, I need to have that sounding board for me to make sense.
That energy transfer of working with somebody else to sort of really get your thoughts clear and then out, yeah. I guess.
Which then kind of coming back to what happens when you're a mum and a business owner of one, there's some conflict in that feeling, yeah, of having like, I'm an extrovert thinker, yet I am now, I feel like they're like the genie in a lamp, like I've got all these mighty powers in a nitty bitty space, and that's a crap metaphor. But yeah, when you're an extrovert person and you thrive off being in and around people, that gives you energy all of a sudden. There's been moments in my life where my mojo hasn't really been flowing particularly well, and I honestly think that one of those big contributing factors has been when I haven't been around people to kind of do that energy transfer that you put so nicely.
So how did you cope with that? Again, I guess we're going a little bit back to when you were in maybe an early motherhood and dealing with all those emotions.
Sorry,
you talked about
like
no it's a great story arc, because it's all come back to where we started, and we said it's about, a lot of this is about being a mum, and but also being a career person, being driven by though that identity and those values, but coming back to what, you know, your values are and what your real purpose is, which is exactly where you are now. But just recognizing, I suppose, of I'm an extrovert, I love being around people, and the only person around me is a one-year-old.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I used to, and I'm not saying this in, it sounds like I'm being lighthearted about it, but I'm really not. I know what I needed to feed off. So I would literally go and talk to anyone who would listen, sometimes just the lady who worked in Waitrose. And I would need to have, and again, you hear this from other mums as well, like, I'm just craving to have an adult conversation. But I also knew what worked for me. And so I would go and put myself in a coffee shop, and I would go and put myself in other like environments that had a bit of buzz and a bit of hubbub, and that would completely resolve that conflict for me. And I think what's really good with life and getting old is when you're able to acknowledge there's an issue, and that you can kind of filter through knowing what works for you and how you might be able to resolve that issue. And so for me, it's going and talking to someone, even if it's the person who's on a counter, you know, who's on the deli counter, that's fine.
Lucky them, I say. But I love what you say there about there is a benefit of getting older, just having more experience, of knowing self, of just being more self-aware about this is what I need to be the best version of myself I can possibly be. And that might be going to work in a certain environment, in a cafe, or booking in certain meetings because I know I need to interact with people. Or if you're more of an introvert type, I need to, right now my energy's draining, I need to take myself away and be with my thoughts. But knowing extrovert, introvert, however you're programmed, is so important.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, and I think we're always evolving and changing, aren't we? I always think that it's my business is always in beta, and I'm always in beta because I'm always sort of like trying to improve upon myself. And I think as I get older, actually, oh my God, I can't believe I'm actually going to say it, but I'm starting to be a bit more introvert, and I'm starting to feel like I recharge and I get energized by being by myself. Only sometimes, and it has to be very selective. I would always lean into that more extrovert way of feeling alive. It definitely fuels my mojo, that momentum of energy of people. But yeah, you change as people, don't you? And so I'm starting to feel like, oh God, there's moments here that, oh, shock horror, I need to go and be a little bit on my own sometimes to recharge. Although maybe that's having two kids.
I'm sure a lot of that just needing that energy is part of that. But that wisdom is just really profound and lovely to hear. It's almost, you know, there's an exercise of writing a letter to your 16, 21-year-old self. That's the sort of thing I guess you might put in that. What would you put in a letter to let's say your 21-year-old self? What would you say?
Oh, do you know what? I really don't want to sound like an A-class knobhead, but I would just say to do what you did, and just to enjoy the process. Do you know what? And the three girlfriends who I'm going to talk about now will completely laugh when they hear this, but I went on this really awesome holiday once. We were sailing around St. Lucia, amazing, as you do. Oh, to be in your 20s. And anyway, I was sat on this like gorgeous boat, actually just outside of Mystique, we were there for New Year. And I was talking to my three girlfriends, and I was like, I just don't think about things. And they're like, what do you mean you just don't think? Well, I just don't really have any thought. And the wonderful thing was, I just didn't have any worries. And they're like, well, what do you think about in the shower? Like nothing. And it's not that I was like a complete vacant person or not particularly very deep, but I just didn't carry a lot of like worries and stuff. And then as you go through your 30s and life changes and you have different rhythms and different, and you get those worries and stuff kind of creep in, I look back at that conversation and I think about that moment of, oh my God, at one point in my life I actually could say out loud, oh, I don't have anything to worry, I don't really think about anything particularly, you know, hard. So that would be my letter to myself, is to just enjoy things and don't overthink things, because there will get a point in your life where you do become like, you do overthink things, and that is, yeah, a harder phase of life, shall we say.
I mean, that sort of just enjoy where you are right now is a lovely piece of advice, because I would probably say something very similar. I was much more, oh, what's going to happen in the future when I was younger? Why are you worrying about the future? Just be in the moment a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I need to take that, my own advice myself, when I do worry, you know, about things and think, just kind of, yeah, I'd probably make myself think about this conversation that we're having now and the next time that I'll be, you know, worrying and fretting and, you know, having the realities of adult life kind of creeping in, is to just take that, oh, you know, just be in the moment and enjoy the now. So luckily, I did have a moment in my life where I was that chilled out person.
But it's still timely advice. It's just enjoy now.
Yeah.
Because it's all going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Stokesy. Very profound person.
That's very rarely said, but thank you very much. We just said let's not worry about the future, but I am going to ask you now, with no irony intended, about future plans for what you're doing. And I know you've got a very exciting new launch, a new brand that you're bringing to the market. Tell us.
Well, yeah, gosh, this has been a little thing in my head, chipping away again in my head, chipping away. And in the same way that I did with Chicken Egg Dinosaur, well, no, I just did it and I put it out there into the world and was like, okay, I'm now committed to this. So it's a new occasion-led kids apparel brand that will see me designing and manufacturing and selling t-shirts and sweatshirts that align with different family moments through the year. And I think since being a mum, part of my values is about bringing people together and having fun and God, yeah, being a mum has just given me a bit of an invitation to go a little bit extra on things. So, you know, things, even like Valentine's Day, I've only just de-Valentine's my house yesterday because I literally have so many decorations that I put up in the house, and the same for Easter and the same for Halloween.
You do Valentine's decorations. Wonderful.
I do. I go all out. Well, Cassie's middle name, my daughter's middle name, is Valentine. It's like her unofficial second birthday, like the Queen, because she's my Queen. I just like these different like family occasions through the year. And I found that I was trying to source T-shirts or like pajamas or different like fun kids apparel that can kind of help just add a little bit of extra magic to these things, and I just couldn't find what I wanted, so I'm going to go out and do it, and that's what I'm doing.
I love that. Find the gap in the market, realise no one's doing what you need, and go, right, I'm going to fill that gap, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely a side hustle, passion project. I designed, it makes me sound like Stella McCartney. Obviously, I don't think I'm Stella McCartney. But, you know, I made the kids' Valentine's T-shirts this year. And they'll be just, like, fun slogans that can bring a little bit of extra magic to what's already, like, lovely family occasions throughout the year.
Right, you've been overly modest again, because you still haven't mentioned the name of this new brand. Oh. Please tell us so we can go and find it.
It is Booms and June Studio. So on Instagram, and there'll be a Shopify site off of Instagram and stuff that will be able to, go and check it out.
Well, as an expectant parent, obviously that's what me and my wife are going to go and do. And all for everyone else that's listening, I will be putting all those links in the show notes, both to the new business and to Chicken Egg Dinosaur. So we're nearly done, and thank you so much for your time. I always finish with a question around daily habits. And we talked a little bit to this as we've gone through, but... And you talked about your graphic equalizer of mojo, so you really feel and see when it's a bit low. But what things are you doing kind of every day to just try and keep that mojo as high as possible?
I'm coffee, and I'm not saying it's just to be funny, but I never drank coffee until I had a child, and it's become a real ritual. I really enjoy that moment, and I enjoy the aftermath of that little tea. I still get that little tingle coffee buzz. So I really enjoy, and you could take that as it's a moment for yourself. So for me, it's a moment for myself, and I like to have a flat white. To be active, I really love fun, uplifting, like exercise classes with other people. I'm talking like Zumba style or like dance style, like, okay. Things just like fun, and you know, I just like to go and have a little bit of a fun and let out, but being active, as we've talked about walking, I think walking is just sort of like so amazing, but sometimes I like want to do something a bit more high energy, so being active, and the other one is to have a laugh and to smile, because you know, I know that probably paints me a picture of a bit of this really twee little, like, oh, I'm so happy all the time. And I'm really not happy all the time. I like to try and be happy all the time. But the best thing about having kids is that it doesn't matter what kind of day you've had. At the end of the day, they go to sleep and they have given me so much joy, and they've made me laugh. Even when I could have been, like, looking forward to their bedtime for the last 4 hours, yet they somehow make me laugh and smile. And so I think if you can try and give yourself that laugh and smile, it really does do you well.
I love that, because one, you're one of the most smiley people I know, and it's really genuine. But I think that reminder to smile, I have to remind myself to smile. And I'm a happy person, but sometimes you don't realise what you're wearing on your face might not be showing what you're actually feeling inside. So just thinking about smiling, because it's such a welcoming, happy sign, isn't it?
Yeah, it does, and it changes how you feel inside as well. And you know, if I'm thinking about my visualizer, and when my mojo's going and I've got momentum and I feel like I'm, like, you know, moving forward, and I don't have those things holding me back that might take your smile away, you know, that kind of like, oh, I've got a bit of self-doubt, and I'm like, no, if you can channel that into that little smile, I genuinely do think it helps.
Well, we're both finishing this podcast off with big smiles on our faces. Nicola, Davo.
Davo.
Davo. Thank you so much. That's been wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. It's lovely to see you.
Just really loved our conversation there in the church at House of St Barnabas. So many takeaways, and a lot of personal ones actually for me, as actually my wife and I are about to embrace parenthood in the next couple of months. So her words of wisdom really, really mattered. Also, how she recalibrated what success was, but never ever lost her ambition or her drive. Her innate creativity was always there, and indeed, motherhood only strengthened that. Getting her ideas out there by making them real, this really helped to take that big leap of faith into doing something new, and that is truly courageous. And as an exercise, maybe have a go at writing that letter to your 21-year-old self. What would you say? What advice or counsel would you have loved to have had back then? All the links to Davo's business, Chicken Egg Dinosaur, and her new enterprise, Boone & June Studio, are in the show notes. Do go and check them out. And as ever, please do subscribe to the Mojo Podcast to get new episodes as soon as they drop. Please leave a 5-star rating, and the holy grail, please write that short review on Apple Podcasts, all of which helps the Mojo Podcast be more discoverable by more people. And on this one, please do share this episode with your network. If it helps inspire one person to make a positive change, then our job here is done. Until next time, I hope your mojo continues to flow.